Those two girls.
All right, well, look, I'll set the scene.
Yep.
So I was wandering through a bookstore with one of my very good friends who has been sober for 6 months now. She just made the decision to ditch alcohol from her life. She was finding it was too easy to just open a bottle of wine anytime she saw friends. Mm-hmm. Sometimes she'd have a glass of wine or two watching telly, you know, just life.
To unwind.
Just to unwind, take the edge off. Anyway, we were perusing the shelves and I saw a pink covered book that said The Wine O'Clock Myth, The Truth You Need to Know About Women and Alcohol. And I held it up and showed it to my friend and I said, oh, this might be good. You should have a look at that. And she flipped through the pages and she said, yep, that's pretty much how I've felt with it all, and put it back on the shelf. And I thought, why did I tell her to look at it when she's already
there?
Mm. And the book really stayed with me because even though I don't have a problem with alcohol in my life, the notion of how ingrained alcohol is to women particularly really stayed with me. So a few days later, I went back to the bookstore and bought it and I've read it. And
you came to work and you said, Lise, we have to speak to Lotta.
Yes.
Lotta Dam, the author of this book. And I said, well, I mean, geez, that's quick. You move fast. Let's do it.
All right. And Lotta is on the line with us right now.
I'm here from New Zealand.
Yes, we've got her. So, Lotta, you made the decision to ditch booze in your life a number of years ago, started writing about it online, amassed quite the community, and ended up having one bestseller book. And you've partnered up with like New Zealand government and everything to create safe spaces where people can talk about their battle and reasons to lessen or reduce or quit alcohol altogether.
Can I go back, Lotta, and just ask you, why did you decide to quit alcohol in the first place?
Oh, I had to. It took me to a really dark place and, you know, I was hiding bottles, drinking way too much, feeling stuck and miserable, and had a very intense internal conversation with myself about it, which no one else could hear or see. That's the thing. There'll be a lot of people struggling. You don't know it because a lot of it's on the inside. But I was in a really dark place, so I had to make the terrifying decision to take it away because it is terrifying.
I think I've got a rough idea from reading a book, but just explain what was terrifying to you about living an alcohol-free life.
Because my whole life I had been conditioned to believe that alcohol was necessary to have a fun, full life. You know how we live. You know, it's just shown to us, like, this is how you have fun. This is how you relax. This is how you celebrate. It's right through our media. It's right through TV, movies. You know, and I was just hardwired to really genuinely believe that. And so facing a life with no booze is like staring at a black hole of boring. And I really just thought that the fun would stop. But I had to do it because I was in such a dark place. And it was only after I took it away and started living without it and slowly sort of opening my eyes to all of these lies we've been sold that I started thinking, this is madness. And way too many people are struggling.
Lotta, tell us a little bit about yourself, though, because I'm interested. You're married, you have three children. This is a lot of our listeners are in that similar sort of lifestyle, I guess. I'm married with two boys. Sarah, you're married with two daughters. Were you drinking the way women our age drink, which is, you know, crack open a bottle, come 5 o'clock with the words sort of, you know, I deserve this, this is my reward, I need to unwind. Is that how you were drinking?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, 5 o'clock was wine o'clock for me for about 20 years, no joke. And it's just what I did. I was like fun drinking Lotta, and that's all I ever wanted to be. Fun, you know, upbeat Lotta. And I achieved that by drinking wine every single day. Mm. I mean, it was very unusual for me to have a night off. And after I started having kids, I never drank when I was pregnant, I should say, but as soon as, you know, they were off the boob, I would be back into my 5 o'clock wines. And it made me feel like I was a part of the adult world because I had this conditioning. But what I didn't realise is, you know, that actually underneath a lot of my drinking was actually some really unresolved sadness. I just was terrible at feeling any uncomfortable emotion, and I did anything I could to avoid it. And so a big part of getting sober for me was learning how to be sad sometimes and how to be okay with that and be angry sometimes and be okay with that. And the more that I live like that, it's just so much better, yeah. Honestly.
Well, that's the thing about that whole, it's wine o'clock somewhere, it's, you know, all those kind of sayings that are just in everyday vernacular.
Well, it is that mum trope, isn't it?
Well, Lise and I have been very uncomfortable with that for a number of years, and we haven't really been able to put our finger on why. I guess we've sort of thought it's been a bit of a lame gag that you need a wine to be able to cope with what's happening in your life. And as you've said, you're actually suppressing emotions and feelings at a certain point, aren't you?
Yeah, but the problem is, or not the problem if it's what you want, but the drug works in the moment. When you have that first sip of Chardonnay, you get hit with dopamine, you get instantly relaxed, you get that feel-good chemical in your brain, it works. And so there's a reason why, you know, we keep going back to it, even when we can see that it's not serving us well. And, I mean, it's important to say there are a lot of people who can drink moderately and not have a problem. And, you know, alcohol's not going anywhere. I don't think prohibition is dumb and it's never going to happen. But we just need to have our eyes open and go, is it right in our society that we are constantly pushing this message that it is the best way to cope? Maybe there's other ways to cope that are better. And maybe we should be open about the fact that this drug is addictive and dangerous, and just shift the environment that we live in and the dialogue we have with each other so that it's easier to not do it all the time, especially if you're struggling.
There may be women listening right now who are like, hold on, I just enjoy one glass of wine every couple of nights. Yes, it helps me relax. Yes, I feel like a calmer parent when I have that. I do not have a problem and I don't want to stop. What are some questions you would have to ask yourself to determine if you're using it as a crutch or if you're just simply enjoying one of life's little pleasures?
You wouldn't have to ask yourself any questions because you would know. I always say this, that the drinker knows. If you're listening to me right now and thinking, I have one glass of wine every couple of days, I don't have a problem, you know, you do you. That sounds totally non-problematic. There's no need for you to feel guilty about that or worry about it. But if you woke up at 3 o'clock this morning feeling guilty about how much you drank last night, if you're struggling this morning because you're feeling hungover and guilty and you've got a raging internal dialogue that is worried, listen to that little voice because that's the true part of you that knows. And those are the people I really want to talk to. Although, I have to say, also, it's the people like you who picked up the book and thought, okay, I don't have a problem, but I'm interested in this. Those are the other people I really want to reach because we need those people on side.
Yeah, I ended up going to the Australian Government Health Guidelines for drinking, and it said that men and women should have, I'm assuming it's the same over in New Zealand as well, no more than 10 standard drinks a week and any more than 4 in one sitting
is
a binge. Well, here's the thing, right? I thought, okay, I will happily have a couple of glasses of wine, maybe 3 with my husband on a Friday or Saturday night. And I got my wine glass that I drink out of and I filled it up with water to the level where I would usually put my wine to and then I add a few ice cubes in, very Kath and Kim. And
class.
And then I measured it in a measuring cup. Now,
how much?
Standard wine is 100 mils. I thought I was filling it to 1.5.
So 150.
I was having 2.5 glasses of wine in my one wine glass. So here I am thinking I'm just having 2 or 3 glasses of wine.
So you were having 3 times 250
mil. That's right. So really I'm at my standard drink limit per week just on 2 nights and I haven't realized,
wow.
But I would never describe myself as somebody who was having 10 drinks a week.
No way.
No way. And so this has blown my mind. So straight away I'm like, oh God, I've just got to have half that amount for my standard drinks. So it's those kind of where, as you said, like I don't have an alcohol problem, but that's been a wake up call. And also,
yeah, well, how great is that, that you've got that information now and you can act on it? And a lot of people have no idea what a standard drink is.
No.
I mean, we just don't talk like that.
100 mil isn't a lot.
No. Well, I said it to you. We were talking about it afterwards.
It's a cup of flour if you're making muffins. You know?
Yes.
It's a tiny amount.
That's it.
A tiny amount.
That's
people would. I mean, I went out for a casual dinner with my husband the other night, and we always joke, you know, when they do the pour, the wine pour at a restaurant, and they obviously are restricted to the standard drink, 100 mil, but when you look at it in those beautiful big glasses, my husband always says to the waiter, is the tide out? Because he's just shocked at how small it is in the glass. It really looks like they're ripping you off.
Yes.
And I was like, no, that's your standard drink, mate.
Yeah. And at least, you know, if we can have this conversation, and here we are on the radio talking about standard drink sizes, you know, which is great, because most people have no idea. And so it's just, again, it's just shifting that dialogue that we're having about alcohol away from this kind of open slather. It's great, go for it.
Yeah, have it at every celebration, every baby's birth, every wedding, every birthday, every graduation.
And just actually treat it with a little bit more caution and just, you know, information, because at the end of the day, I mean, I hate to say it, and you don't want to be, you know, branded a wowser, but it is an addictive drug. And so we need to be treating it as such. And it, like I always say, not going anywhere, that's fine, but let's just be much more open and honest and open our eyes to what it is and also what it's doing. Because I keep saying, you know, there are so many people who are feeling guilty and miserable and stuck about their drinking, and they're terrified to do anything about it.
Yeah, I would say that reading your book has turned me into a more mindful drinker.
I'm interested, Lotta, if we can go back to what I would call trigger people, because I think who you are as a person in your social group or in your family group is really intricately tied with alcohol. For example, when my mother-in-law comes over, without a doubt, we look at each other and we'll have a wine.
But this is
unspoken thing that when it's our moment in the week or the fortnight, because I don't see her every day, where we so enjoy catching up, but it is always done with a wine in hand. So is my mother-in-law a trigger for me?
I mean, I can't believe you're talking about it openly, because
I might be a trigger for her.
But that's what's in Lotta's book. Yeah. It's about how female friendships and female relationships are so steeped in booze that's your bond.
Is that bad, Lotta? Is that bad that she and I really look forward to that?
Well, it depends where it's taking you, like all drinking. You know, do you have too many and then it turns into a big boozy session?
No.
I mean, try and not, you know, because you probably really like each other. You have that moment where you're like, yay, and you've over time associated that with the wine. And actually, it's about the fact you probably just really enjoy each other's company. And so try and just be mindful. That's the thing that's good here. It's the connection with the other human. It's not the liquid in my glass. And just try and shift away from that. Like, ooh, lovely. Hey, I've made this amazing mocktail with lemongrass and, you know, strawberry-infused ice cubes. And then, you know, it's just not about the liquid. It's about the actual vibe between the people. Because at the end of the day, that is what connects us. That is what life lifts us up and makes us feel good. It is the humans we're with, not what we're drinking.
Well, and you bring that up with book clubs as a classic example for female relationships too, Lotta, where often book clubs do not have much intellectual discussion of the literature that has apparently been read. It's an excuse to get together, booze up, gossip, and then bond, because, of course, you get loose lips when your tongue is a bit hinged in the middle after a few drinks. You start sharing things, and that's where bonding happens.
Yeah, I mean, not all book clubs, I should hasten to add, but a lot of them, certainly ones I've been in the past. And you do feel like you're bonding because you are getting that massive dopamine hit and it's exciting. But actually, you know, real bonding is more gentle and real and vulnerable. And you have to be willing to make yourself a little bit vulnerable to open up to someone and connect with them. And then you're really, really bonding. And so it was interesting, actually, when I was researching the book, and interviewing all the women, you know, whose stories I've included, a lot of them did say, you know, one of the big fears for me in quitting drinking is losing my friends, because that's what we do together. We drink, we get booze. And I need my girlfriends and I don't want to lose them. And it's not that they'll be horrible and cut me off if I quit, but they'll want to support me by not inviting me because, you know, they think I don't want to be around them while they're drinking. And so I'm really encouraging people, just talk honestly with your girlfriends. And if you are wanting to try and cut down and you're worried about the amounts, just say to them, you know, maybe we could do stuff that's not around alcohol, maybe we could do daytime activities. You know, hopefully they'll come along for the ride if they are really good friends. If they are just booze buddies and they don't want to know you,
did you lose friends when you decided to live an alcohol-free life, Lotta?
Yeah, no, I didn't, because at the time when I quit, I really wasn't doing much socialising, to be honest. I was mostly drinking at home on my own, to be frank, you know, and I wasn't in a big boozy social group. But it is the reality, as I say, for a lot of other women. It was quite good for me to hear that when I was researching this book, because it hadn't been my reality. But no, relationships do shift and change. You know, it'd be silly to deny that. And it can take time to build up the new connections in their place of the boozy connections. But trust me, they'll be better, deeper, more lovely, you know, real connections. So you just have to kind of hold tight if you're losing friends and just know that, you know, good things are around the corner.
There's no doubt, though, that people do use it as a social lubricant. You know, people who might have a bit of social awkwardness or social anxiety, once you have that first gulp or that first glass, all of a sudden, you know, for some people they get, you know, like you said, the dopamine hit, they feel a little bit more confident. And, you know, I'm thinking of mums at school who send the obligatory, we're having drinks, we're getting all the mums in grade two are getting together and we're having drinks. I mean, this is a reality
for
women in our stage of life. And these are women that you don't necessarily know. So the alcohol becomes necessary for these women to interact with one another. Is that accurate in the research you've done?
I mean, when you say necessary, though, they believe it's necessary.
They believe it to be necessary, yeah.
And they become to rely on it to give them the courage to go out socially. And again, the drug works. So yes, it takes the edge off, and you know, maybe that negative inner dialogue you've got about your inability to make small talk goes away because you've had a few drinks, and suddenly you find yourself being able to make small talk.
Well, you can tolerate idiots a bit more, can't you?
Yeah, but I mean, here's the thing: there is nothing wrong with A, feeling awkward at a party. There's also nothing wrong with B, not going to a party. If you're actually naturally quite introverted, or if you're feeling, you know, just a bit delicate and tender and you think you need to stay at home with your comfy pants on and watch some crappy TV, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, we really favour this extroverted social world, like that's the way we should all be, and we're not all that way inclined. So if you're feeling like, I don't want to drink, but I've got to go to this party, maybe actually don't go to the party and don't feel bad about it.
Well, Lotta, I think too, and I wonder from your experience, is it, you know, it takes a lot of courage to actually say, to be in a social gathering and say, I'm not drinking, because in society now you basically can only have two valid reasons that people will generally accept as a woman. That is, you're pregnant, or you've got some other medical condition. And to actually verbalise and say, I'm not drinking, people look at you like you're a Debbie Downer, right?
Come on, just have one.
What?
Yeah, no,
it's all about making them feel better about your decision, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's also no shame in pretending. Just get a Red Bull and tell people it's Red Bull and vodka, you know, if that's what you need to do.
But isn't it funny that we have to pretend?
And like, is that propagating the problem?
That's right. I thought about myself.
That's right. That is true. But until we actually change the environment and change our discourse, you've got to look after yourself. So I'm sorry, you know, at the moment, yes, we want to change the world. Yes, I'm hoping my new book will open some eyes. I would love it if we change some regulations around alcohol. But until that happens, we live in a booze-soaked world. There's pressure to drink. If you're going out and you don't want to deal with the pressure, pretend or lie.
Well, Lise, you and I have done that. We've had Diet Coke in a wine glass, because there's something about holding a wine glass that makes you feel like you're at a party. You're not just holding a crappy old tumbler or a plastic cup. And it means other people just see you with that glass in your hand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it is fraught, I know, I get that. And the bottom line is, though, after about half an hour, when everyone's got their drinks in hand and they're just talking bollocks, you can just go with the flow. Like, it's often just the initial part of the night where it's maybe slightly awkward. You just got to get through that and then get to the point where you can just fake it till you make it. And you might have a great night sober. You also might not. That's okay. Go home. Don't blame it on the fact that you're sober. It just wasn't your night. And, you know, you've got to feel good about that. And just that's when I would say go home and connect with other people who know what it's like, because there are a lot of us online talking to each other about this stuff.
Yeah. Do you think coronavirus has impacted people in waking up to reducing their alcohol intake? I'm sure I read a statistic that said 20% of people were drinking more in lockdown.
Yeah, the research here showed that there's people drinking more, but there's also other people drinking less. Like, some people used it as the perfect opportunity to cut back. And also the younger people, because they weren't going into pubs and bars so much, they weren't drinking so much because they're not in that habitual at-home boozing kind of mindset. So it's had a mixed reaction, but, you know, there's a lot of anxiety around. And if alcohol's your main way to deal with your emotions, it makes sense people have turned to alcohol. So I'm trying not to make people feel bad about that, but just really letting them know, have a really honest look at it. And if it's not serving you and you're feeling guilty about it, you've got to know that it is possible to live without alcohol. I never touch it and I don't miss it at all. And I have a great normal life.
Well, the wonderful thing about your book too, Lotta, is how many personal stories are in there. So it's not just, it's certainly not a stats and facts book about losing the plonk in your everyday life. It's first-hand accounts from other women who have A, quit, B, know that they should quit, or C, kind of refuse to quit because they don't have the strength to do it.
Lotta, can I ask you, what were the immediate changes you saw in yourself, in your perhaps your relationships, your parenting, when you made the call to put the wine glass down?
Well, on a positive note, I started sleeping better immediately, which had a hugely transformational effect on my life. And I did lose weight, although I gained it again, but I've lost it again. So, you know, that's an ongoing. Let's not talk about sugar. That's a whole other interview. But in terms of my relationships and everything, I just got more connected because I started feeling everything and I got in touch with my anger and my sadness, and I let the tears out now. My boys now live with a mum who is fully emotional and reacting to things that are happening around her and showing them that that's okay. And I just did get way more connected to myself. And I can't even begin to tell you how my life has changed. Like, I'm a completely different woman and so much better for it, that I'm not numbing myself every single day, which is what I used to do.
So when we started talking to you, you said when you were drinking a lot, you were fun, good time Lotta. Now you're not drinking. Are you still fun, good time Lotta?
When it's appropriate to be that, yes, of course. When I'm happy and upbeat, yes, I listen to music. I dance around my kitchen. I have great laughs with my friends. You know, yes, absolutely. But I'm now also sad Lotta. I know now that I'm actually quite a watery person. I cry pretty easily. I'm very empathetic. The tears are quick, and that's okay. That was the hardest thing for me to really come to terms with, that I've got this kind of, I don't know how to describe it. I don't want to say wounded, but quite sort of, I don't know, tender Lotta.
Tender Lotta. Vulnerable Lotta, because there's a great quote you put in page 83, chapter Disconnection. by Brené Brown, who explained it in her Power of Vulnerability speech. And you've quoted her here saying, you cannot selectively numb emotion. You can't say, here's the bad stuff, here's vulnerability, here's grief, shame, fear, disappointment. When we numb those, we numb joy, we numb gratitude, we numb happiness. And alcohol is a neurological sledgehammer for all of that, right?
Yeah. And when I feel joy now, and it doesn't happen all the time, because joy is a rare beast, right? I used to find it in a bottle. Now it comes to me naturally. And when it comes, oh my goodness, it is so overwhelming. Like, I just feel it. It's like a bubbling in my chest. It's unbelievable. I feel it at concerts. I feel it when I'm sitting around a table with people I love. And I suddenly am like, I feel joyous. And it is incredible. Like, I've never sensed it before. It's not a regular occurrence, but it's beautiful. And so that's the thing. It's like it takes a transition to go from being that kind of person relying on the dopamine hit to being a person relying on the natural waves. It does take a bit of time to get used to that. But once you've kind of made it through that tough part of transitioning and getting used to it, it's just it's a much more realistic and rewarding way to live, because you really do feel the highs and lows, and they're all there for a reason. I mean, it's so cliched, isn't it? But they are all there for a reason, and we've got to feel it.
Lotta, did your husband come along for the ride?
Yeah, so he's having his own relationship with alcohol. He's a very casual drinker. He's not got the beast. You know, he can open a bottle of wine, have a glass, and then leave it in the fridge for 2 weeks, which I could never do. But he's naturally pulled back, and he's had a couple of big binges that he's really not enjoyed since, you know, that he's been quite upset by, to be honest, in the last couple of years. So he's having his own kind of dialogue. He's very aware that he lives in this world where it's habitual to drink at any kind of gathering, and he's just, yeah, his poor sod lives with me, so his eyes are kind of wide open. But he's having his own kind of, yeah, relationship with. He drinks very moderately.
So, yeah. How, if you've taken alcohol out of the equation, how do you reward yourself these days?
Well, I buy myself lovely sober treats. So if I really want to reward myself, I'll splash out on a ridiculously expensive scented candle or fresh flowers or lots of beautiful cups of tea, you know, bath bombs, like just cheesy stuff that makes me feel good and pampered. And just how do I really reward myself? I just reward myself by feeling really grateful and proud of what I've done. I mean, that's the underlying thing that underpins all of my life now, is that I know I went to a dark place and I dug deep and I got myself out of it. And so no matter what, I'm always going to feel good about that.
Lotta, amazing to talk to you and to hear your not only your story, but just your thoughts on all of this. I really think this book will change the lives of anyone who reads it, whether they have an alcohol problem or not.
It's definitely a conversation that friends will have together. And I think if anything, it's just reevaluating, why do I drink, and do I need a drink for this occasion? I think that's probably what I'll do.
Yeah. Do I have to have a drink just because everyone else is?
Yeah.
I don't really feel like it.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, bless you guys. And it's just so great that you are talking like this, honestly, publicly on the radio. It is that kind of discourse in the mainstream media that's going to shift things. And I'm telling you, there'll be people listening right now who may in the future, you know, look back and go, it was because of this thing on the radio and I turned my life around. So bravo to you guys.
Oh, well, thank you. And look, if you want to get your hands on it, it's called The Wine O'Clock Myth by Lotta Dan, available at all good bookstores. I've always wanted to say that.
If I ever get my hands on it, because she's still holding it, clutching it like a newborn.
I've earmarked so many pages. I just love it. Thanks, Lotta.
Oh, thank you.